Right now, I would like to introduce our second speaker, Cynthia from Northern California. Wait.
I'm an addict named Cynthia.
Hi,
and I'm pretty overwhelmed, pretty grateful. And I'm feeling truly, truly, truly honored to be invited to come speak at the World Convention in San Diego, California. I feel. Thank you so much for your share, Muhammad. Thank you for getting me in touch with my feelings, because for a little while I was just kind of overwhelmed, and then I was able to drop down into my heart and just be here. It kind of just hit me that here we are at the World Convention, and wow, you guys, it's amazing that we get to be here and that we get to be clean, that we get to be clean. And you know what? That we get to recover all over the world. Thank you so much for that. Thank you. You know, and we living here where we live in the United States, I take it for granted, right? So I just want to say thank you for the hard work that you're doing. And I also want to say thank you to the World Service Office for the hard work that they do. So I also got a phone call about 45 days ago and said that you've been invited to speak at a topic meeting at the World Convention, and the topic is being a sponsee. You want me to do what? And I was like, that's a perfect topic for me. Sponsorship is the thing that I love the most. It's the one thing. It's the service that I do and I love. Sponsorship has been the grounding force for me, for this addict. Sponsorship has been the thing. And the women that have sponsored me through the years have taught me so much about being a sponsor. And some of the women that have sponsored me over the years have taught me about what I didn't want to be like in a sponsor. But the sponsors that sponsored me in my early recovery set the tone for who I have become as a sponsor. And you know, just from the very first time that I got to Narcotics Anonymous, when I finally surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I came in 1991, and I surrendered in 1995. And in that 4 years that I got here, and I heard that there was another way to live, and I could see that other people were able to get this. I really wanted to get this, too, but I didn't want to have to. Like, I wanted to recover, but I didn't want to have to stop using to recover, right? And so I'd come in and out and in and out and in and out. I'd go to meetings high. I took the basic text to my dope man's house, and right? And I was, like, showing him my basic text and that I'd found this program that could work for me if. And he was like, that's great, you know, if, right? So I put the basic text down on his table, and I can remember him pouring out some dope on it, and I did some dope, you know, off the basic text, and I went home and I read that book all night long, right? And I did that for a long time, right? I did that for 4 years. I started to get the information. I started to get the information that maybe this program, like, it was working for you guys. I could see that it was working for you guys. I was hearing that you guys had lived the way that I had lived, and you guys were changing, like there was something that had started to shift inside your spirit, and that I really wanted it. I really wanted it, but I didn't think I deserved it. I didn't think that I deserved what you guys had. You know, doing the work that I've done because of those sponsors that have guided me, I got to find out that I was a sick addict. I didn't know when I got here that I was sick. I didn't know. I came in with the weight of the world on my shoulder. I had the shame of the world on my shoulder. It felt like the shame that I came into Narcotics Anonymous with was like those, you know, those blankets they put on us when we go to the dentist to take x-rays. It felt like there was a bunch of those just piled on me, right? I had that much shame, and I didn't think that I could ever recover. I didn't think that I deserved it. But the first thing that my first sponsor, I remember raising my hand and saying that I'm an addict. And my name's Cynthia, and I need a and I don't want to have sex for drugs anymore. And there was a woman in the back of the room, and she gave me her number. And she said, call me. And by the grace of God, I got up enough courage to call her. That was the very first thing, you know. You want me to do what? Right? I called her, and I asked her to sponsor me. You know, I don't know where that courage came from. And she said, you know what, I'll sponsor you, but if you don't want what I have, don't waste my time. Because what I have is way too valuable to give away to people that don't want it. And by this time, it was 1995, you guys. By this time, I had gotten enough pain. You see, in those 4 years that I went in and out, and I went in and out, when you get enough Narcotics Anonymous in your head and you have a body full of drugs, you get real suicidal. And for this addict, what happened was I stepped up on the chair and I put a belt, the belt around the fan. And I stepped up there and I put the belt around my neck. And I stepped off the chair. And I stepped off the chair and I grabbed the chair back just in time. It's like I didn't want to die. I just didn't want to live anymore, right? And I remember hitting the floor. I ended up somehow getting that belt off of my neck, and I remember going to the floor, and I remember saying, God, help. I can't live with drugs, and I can't live without them. And in that moment, what happened for me, I went on to use the next day, you guys. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody that I tried to commit suicide. The next day, I tried to get loaded. I couldn't get loaded. The drugs, the same drug that I had used for 20 years, that had always done what I wanted it to do. I put it in my body and I couldn't get high anymore. It wasn't taking away the pain anymore. And I did that for another 6 months. Every day I used and I couldn't get high anymore. So when I asked God for help, that was what God did for me, is he allowed me to feel the feelings anyway, right? And I finally got tired of feeling the feelings anyway. At some point, I just laid the drugs down. And I said, I'm done. Came into a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. My hand went up at the end of the meeting. And I remember when that gentleman said, are there any burning desires? This hand went up, and I'm thinking, who did that, right? And I can remember this man that was secretary in that meeting that night. He said, are there any burning desires? And I said, my name's Cynthia, and I'm an addict, and I'm going to get clean in this fellowship. And he said, keep coming back. And people clapped, and they said, keep coming back. And by that time, I knew that I could get clean in this fellowship. And I asked that woman if she would sponsor me, and I told her that I would do anything I could do. Anything that she asked me to do, I'd do. And what she did is she took me under her wing, and she told me how we recover, and she showed me how we recover. I started working the steps, and I can remember getting to the first step, writing on the first tip, right? You know how we do today? You hear, there's 69 questions in that first step, right? So I called her and I whined about that. It was before we had the workbook. But what I said was, there's way too many. She said, we do them one question at a time, right? And she hung up the phone. So I, so simple, right? We get way out there. And I called her and I told her I was finished with that first step. And I was so proud of myself when I finished that first step, because I had never finished anything without drugs in my body. Anything. I couldn't do the dishes. I didn't get out of bed. I certainly didn't go to work. I wasn't an addict that was capable of working. I was an addict that was very sick when they got here. Some are sicker than others. I was one of the sick ones. You know, after 20 years of using that drug that keeps you awake for 20 years, right? Living in the dark hours of the morning, in all those sick sexual situations that I got myself into. When I got here and I surrendered, you know, and for me, what happened is once he took the drugs out of my body, right? All those feelings that I had been running from all those years came back. And I was an addict that cried in every meeting that I went to. People would come into the meeting and go, oh, my God, there she is, right? Sobbing. And they would say, man, I hope I don't get what she's got, right? But I had I had some stuff to cry about, and I didn't know that at some point I would stop crying. I finished my 12 steps with that sponsor, and I decided to get a new sponsor at that point. She had pretty much given me everything. What I know today is shortly after that, this first sponsor that I had, she had decided that she was going to use again. But before that had happened, I had already got a new sponsor. And this new sponsor that I remember going up to the Reno convention. And I knew that I wanted to learn how to have a voice, right? I didn't know how to have a voice. And some of us have to, I believe that we come in here and some of us have to learn how to shut up and others need to learn how to speak up. And I needed to learn how to speak up. And this woman that was speaking on that Friday night, she had a voice. I mean, she could just say what it was that she needed to say. And I was so taken by that I knew that I wanted this woman to show me how to do that. And I asked her if she would sponsor me. I remember calling her and she said, yeah, you know what, I'll sponsor you, she said, and I remember this so clearly, but let me tell you something, it's not my job to call you, it's your job to call me. If you want what I have, then you got to do the work. And I was like, man, I was so glad that she told me that it's my job to call my sponsor. It's not my sponsor's job to chase me down and give me what she's got. So if you're out there and you're waiting for your sponsor to call you, you might want to pick up the phone and just say, hey, can we meet up? Right? I learned in early recovery that I needed to stalk my sponsor, right? Like I stalked my dope man. I don't stalk my sponsors like that today. I don't chase them every day, but I have a different relationship with the sponsor that I have today. But certainly in early recovery, I needed to know that I had access to my sponsor pretty regularly, like every day or every other day. Wow. And that woman's here tonight, and I just want to, the woman, my second sponsor, she impacted, she had a huge impact on me. There was, I got to work my steps again with this woman, and you guys, it's just amazing to me what we get out of the steps. I love the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I came in here feeling like I was a mass murderer. I knew that I needed to be on death row. I knew that because of all the abortions that I had had over and over and over again, because I could not stop, because I didn't know how to stop. No one had taught me anything. I didn't come from a family that they teach you. I mean, I'm the baby of seven. Everybody in my family used. So my mother wasn't capable of teaching us any values and morals. So I just did that because it was easy. And what happened was that it became so easy that I would have an abortion just to get loaded, because I knew that they would give me a bunch of pain meds if I waited long enough, right? So that's how sick this addict was. So by the time they took away the drugs, I was in a lot of pain. And you know what? I was able to share with this second sponsor about who I had been. And if you judge me, if you're in this room and you want to judge me for that, believe me, you could not judge me as much as I judged myself whenever I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I hated everything about me. And I knew that if I sat in the back of the room, you guys wouldn't be able to look into my eyes and see who I was, see the monster that I was, right? And I remember sharing with this sponsor my fifth step, and I remember sharing this for the second time around, and I remember doing a sixth and seventh step with the second sponsor. And the sixth and seventh step have always, ever since I worked those steps the second time, have been my favorite steps. Because what happened for me is I got to see who I was. I got to see myself for who I am, and I also got to find out that I'm not any better or any worse than anyone. That's what I got to find out. I got to heal. You guys, I came in here feeling like I was a mass murderer and I deserved to be on death row and that I should be locked up. And what I got to find out through the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, that I'm just like you guys, right? I'm no better or no worse. You guys have to say, you guys have your own pain, your own shame. We all, they might be at different extremes. Some of us are sicker than others, but you know what? It's still the same. And I got to find out through working the steps with this sponsor, she said, I want you to write on, she goes, I want you to identify 100 character defects, right? And I said to her, you want me to do what? I said, I don't think that I have one. And she said, oh, let me help you, you know, and she started, she listed off, you know, she was doing her work when everybody was doing that fist stuff. So she was able to help me to identify what a character defect is. And I love this step because I get to find out that where I'm irresponsible, I get to practice being responsible. I had never been responsible. I think that somebody spoke about it last night, about they were allergic to responsibility, right? Where I was dishonest, I get to practice being honest. Where I'm just, you know, it just goes, the list goes on and on and on. It's so simple for us people who want to complicate shit, right? It's so simple. So I've been practicing these spiritual principles, these spiritual opposites long enough now where they become second nature. And that's what happens when we stick and stay and we do the work. And we do the work and we keep doing the work and we do the work some more. And we do the next right thing. That's one thing that I've learned in this program is we do the next right thing, whatever that is, right, is right in front of us. And so thank you for teaching me. So I've gone on to work the steps, and I did not stay with that sponsor for very long. I've gone through, I was counting them up, I think I'm on my sixth sponsor, and the sponsor that I had previous to the sponsor I have right now, she was the closest woman I've ever been to in my entire life. This woman, she sponsored me for 9 years, and there was, I trusted this woman with everything that I had, and this woman spoke to me daily. She spoke the voice of God to me daily. She was very, very connected to spirit, and she just had a clear connection. And you know, there was nobody I trusted more. And what happened was that she started to stop coming to meetings, and she got busy in her life and she got successful in her business and she, you know, less and less meetings. And at some point I was the only connection. I was the only sponsee that she had. And then she started not calling me back. And I kept calling. And I couldn't see that she was far away from the fellowship, and I kept calling, and then I started to get resentment that she wasn't calling me back. And it's like, what am I going to do? And after, you know, like I'm a really slow learner, so after like 6 months or so, right, I realized that I needed to get a new sponsor. And that was really difficult because this woman, I'd never been close with anybody like I was this woman. And what had happened was my mom passed away. My mom passed away in 2003, and I realized that this woman had taken on that role. She had taken on the role of that kind of love that my mother gave me, right? And so when she started to go away, it was time for me to grieve my mother's death, right? And it was time for me to grieve her going away. And it wasn't long after that she completely stopped coming to Narcotics Anonymous, she started using again. And you know what? That's been really hard. So my first sponsor ended up using again, and my last sponsor ended up using again after 20 years, right? 23 years or something like that, 24. And what that taught me was that I need to go to a fucking meeting. Taught me that I needed to keep coming back. I've done pretty good not cussing, right? I haven't cussed. Yay. So here's the deal. I have a sponsor now. She's 10 years younger than me, and she's in age, and she's about 15 years older than me in recovery. And she's very spiritual, and she's very centered, and she has very few words, but the words that she says to me are the ones exact words that I need to hear in any given moment, right? And I work the steps with her, and I tell her the truth about myself. And I keep, you know what, you guys, today I'm motivated to do my steps. I just do my steps. So my sponsor, when my sponsor says something to me, it's usually because she wants to help me get that breakthrough, some denial that's going on with me. But nobody, my sponsors have, and maybe it's because of that first sponsor or second sponsor that I had. I gotta do my own work. right? Nobody needs to tell me when I start getting swirly, I pick up my book. I know that it's time to do some step work. I know that about myself, so I just do it because you know what? I don't want to be in pain, right? And I know that if I stay where I'm at for very long, I'm going to get in pain, and then I'm going to start going backwards, and then I'm going to get loaded. That I know. So I just have to keep forward momentum. You know, I was thinking earlier about this workshop and being here, and what an honor it is to be here amongst my family, the people that know me, and the people that are, you guys are just like me, right? I know that. But one of the other gifts that I get in my recovery is I get to be in recovery with a man that I'm madly in love with, my husband who also has a program of recovery, and I didn't know when I got to Narcotics Anonymous that I was going to fall in love. I was in a relationship that was abusive. I knew after working the steps with the second sponsor, I knew that I didn't have to be. I started to get better, and I knew that I wasn't going to tolerate abuse. So I got up enough courage. See, I was prostituting myself in my marriage in my early recovery. I was there because it was secure. And he would say to me the things that he would say to me, and I'd think, I got to put up with it because I got to tolerate it because if I don't, he won't support me. And all I have to do is stay here and have sex with him. And what happened for me for this addict was I couldn't do it anymore. I could not do it anymore. And I think a lot of us go through that. And at some point, I got up enough courage to leave. And I got up the courage to leave. And right around that time, my son was graduating high school. My son, who at 10 years old, he was 10 years old when I got clean. And my daughter was 21 years old. See, I had two children. I didn't abort all my children. I had two children. And so my daughter, who was 21 when I got clean, she was about 25, 26. She started going in and out of jail, right? And she started to come down with this disease. See, I didn't know that my daughter had this disease. I was too busy recovering. I was too busy in my own recovery that I couldn't see. But after a while, you know, she would go in and out of jail, and there was times when she'd be arrested, and there was I know there was a time when she had my mother. She took my mother down to my brother's house in some stolen car that she had stolen, right? And so here my daughter is, she's going in and out of jail, and the judge told her, you come back in front of me, you're going to do state prison. And sure enough, within a short period of time, she's back in front of that judge, and he says, okay, you're doing state time. And all this time, you know, my mother's starting to get sick, and I've just left my ex-husband. And my son just graduated from high school, and I was just trying to learn how to live life, right? I was trying to learn how to live life, not in that relationship. I was thinking about having a relationship with my daughter. She wrote me a letter from prison, and she said, I'd like for you to come visit me, even though I hate you with everything that, you know, that my daughter hated me. My daughter hated me with everything that she had, and I know that I'm not the only one in this room that has children that could not stand you. Could not stand us. She looked at me and she was like, you disgust me. And you know what? She had every right to say that you disgust me and that I hate you, because I was not the mom that she deserved. I didn't know how to be a mom. I was a baby. I was 15 years old whenever I gave birth to her. And so I went to go visit her in this prison, and my mom's getting sick, and my mother left Narcotics Anonymous. She was 82 years old, and she used to like to come to meetings with me because I said, you really like the love in the rooms, right? And she's like, no, I go because there's boys there, right? 82 years old, right? So my mother knew that there was something special about Narcotics Anonymous because she could see in her daughter that there was a light that her other kids did not have, her other six children. So I go to visit my daughter down in Chowchilla State Prison. And I go in. And there's this daughter, you know, this daughter that I hadn't seen in a while, and this daughter that hated me. And she was pissed off at me because I got clean. How dare you get clean now? You get clean now? You take me through the hell of your addiction all through my childhood, and now you're going to get clean? How dare you? Fuck you. Right? she said, Mom, I want you to come visit me. So I go down to this facility, and they assigned me to a table. And I'm sitting at this facility waiting for my daughter to come off the yard. And I'm sitting there, and I can't stop crying. And I'm looking around the rooms, and I'm like, how come nobody else is crying? And I couldn't stop. And I just kept crying. So she finally got out. She came out. And I was like, fuck. They allowed us to embrace. I got to hold my daughter. And I said to her, you're not responsible for your addiction, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you don't have to do this anymore. You don't have to live like this. And she said that day it was the only thing that she heard from me was that she didn't have to live like this anymore. And so you guys told me, you said, pray for the addict that's going to carry the message to your daughter. Pray for the addict that's going to carry the message. So I prayed for the addict, and she started going to meetings through H&I. And there was a gentleman that came in there. His name was Lorenzo, and he would go in there, and she said every week he would carry the same message. You know what? He would come back every week, and he'd talk about the same thing. And she said he was so consistent, Mom. Every week he'd just come back, and he would carry the same message. And you know what? And I told her, tell him thank you. Tell him that I've been praying for him. We started. So shortly after that, she was released. She was released. And that day I went to go pick her up in April. I didn't know how things were going to go. She prayed that she could just get along with her mom just long enough to get her to where I was taking her up in Vacaville. And I prayed, what am I going to say to my daughter? I haven't been a mom all these years. I don't know how to be a mom. And the people that I worked with, they said, just God's going to take care of it. So I picked her up at that facility, and I drove her up to Vacaville where I lived, and we went to a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous that night. Shortly after that, my mother started to get sicker. And my daughter and I started to have a relationship. And, you know, she was kind of checking out this Narcotics Anonymous thing. My mom's getting sick. And my daughter and I had gone to a picnic over in Martinez. It was a Memorial Day picnic. And my friend, this man that I had known for 9 years, he was there, and the Spirit said to me, and God doesn't talk to me in words, but God gives me clear indications of what I'm supposed to do next if I listen, right? And my friend was standing there, and my daughter was standing there, and I got this clear message that I needed to ask this man out, and I asked my friend Gilbert out. I said, Gilbert, do you want to go out sometime? And he was like, yeah, that would be nice. It would be an honor, right? It's a little Hispanic man that did heroin. I was never attracted to Hispanic men that did heroin, right? I thinking that I'm somehow different or better than all those years, thinking I do the drug that keeps me up. He does the drug that puts him out, right? Whatever. Like somehow we're different, right? And so I asked him out, and he said he'd be honored, and we started dating. We started seeing each other. We actually went on 3 dates. The first two, we really didn't hit it off. We talked about fellowship stuff, or, you know, hey, you know so-and-so, and you know how we do, right? And then my mom started to get sicker, and she was in the hospital in the same town that he worked in, and I took him to go visit my mom. And I took him to go visit my mom, and my mom just fell head over heels for this little guy, this little man that was my friend, right? And she's getting sicker, and my daughter and I are starting to have this relationship, and she's getting sicker, and I'm starting to fall in love with this man. And my mom was telling me, like, she's laying in the hospital up in the fourth floor at the county hospital in Martinez, and she's going, when is he going to come back? I want him to come back. Tell him to come back. And she had Alzheimer's, and she couldn't really remember his name, but she knew that she wanted him to come back. There was something about him, my friend, that she liked. My mother came from Alabama. She was racist her whole life, but there was something about this little Hispanic man that she really, really liked, right? And I knew that my mom was starting to fall in love with this friend of mine, right? And she's laying in the bed, and she's just like, She's like this little kid. My mother had become so childlike in her Alzheimer's, and she'd stopped eating, and I could see that she was starting to deteriorate, right? I knew she wasn't going to continue to live if she wasn't going to eat. But she wanted my friend to be there. And she kept telling him, you know, one day I'm going to marry you, is what she told him. Right? She told my friend Gilbert, one day I'm going to marry you and take you to Alabama. And he kind of looked at me. And he looked at me and said, Alabama, I don't think the Mexican bus has shown up in Alabama yet. But, you know, as my mother continued to deteriorate and as she got sicker and sicker, she kept telling him, I'm going to marry you, and she was serious. And I knew that I needed to step back and allow my mother to have the process that she was having at the end of her life. And my friend didn't understand it, but he was willing to, because he's always said that, you know what, I didn't understand it. I've never even liked elderly people. He said that. But you know what he said? He said, God set this appointment up, and I know that it's God's appointment, and I need to be here, and I need to follow through with whatever's going on here. And as my mother continued to say, I'm going to marry you one day, I finally said to him, you know, my mom's serious. He would say, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, if you're going to marry my mom, you need to do it soon. Because if you don't, she's going to pass away, and she's not going to have that opportunity. And my mom did not know that I was falling in love with this man. She did not know that he was falling in love with me. She just knew that all I knew is that her light, her whole world lit up when he walked into the room. And so on September 16th, on her boyfriend's, 10-year birthday, they said their vows. In this nursing home, Tina and Henry P. were there, and they witnessed it, and Sterling performed the ceremony in the eyes of God, and my friend wed my mother on her dying bed. And 5 days later, my mother passed away. But before she passed away, she said to him, when I'm gone, you can have my daughter, right? And so 2 years later, I married my dad. It's true. It's a true story. It's a true story, you guys. It's Alabama, right? Roots in Alabama. And so I got to tell you guys, that daughter that I gave birth to whenever I was 15 years old, it came down with the same disease that we have. She used for about another year after she got out of prison. You guys prayed her into this room. You see, I'd come into Narcotics Anonymous and I'd cry and I'd cry and I'd cry. And you guys would say, we're praying for her, baby. We're praying for her. And so I get to be, you know, I truly believe today is, besides the day that I got married, today is the happiest day of my life. Because that baby that I gave birth to whenever I was 15 years old, today is her 37th birthday. And she's here in this room, right? Yeah. And I can tell you that I get to be here with my daughter and my son-in-law who are just amazing people because of this program. I've got to watch the steps of Narcotics Anonymous change both of them. And I get to be in a relationship with a man who absolutely loves me and honors me. And I absolutely love and honor him.
My husband has liver disease. He's in end-stage liver failure, and we're on the transplant list over at UCSF. And for the last 6 or 7 years, we've been off and on and off and on. And we were just back on. We just got back on over at the transplant list just this last few weeks ago, and it's been a real challenge. It's been very difficult at times. We were just in the emergency room last Sunday, and a lot of times I cry. And a lot of times I scream and I process and I call my sponsor and I call my support group and I get in fear and then I get out of fear and then I get in fear and then I get out of fear. Somebody had shared last night about where our, because our disease is here. Our disease is alive and well. I remember going to the convention at the casino. That was the year that I met Algebra. I remember it being at the casino up in Reno and seeing the disease alive and well. What the hell? What do we think in heaven in a convention and in a casino, right? What are we thinking? You know, it's just amazing. It'd be like having a convention at some crack house or something, right? I don't know. But anyway, the disease is alive and well, and whether it's I'm obsessing on shoes or I'm obsessing on Rocky Road ice cream, because that's the one right now that gets me, right? My disease is alive and well, and what I obsess on lately is what am I going to fix for my husband so he has enough food for tomorrow so he can be as healthy as he can possibly be. That's where my disease is today, and I need to be really careful not to get into codependency, and I know that's a whole other program, but here's the thing: I've got to be healthy. I've got to set boundaries. I there's only so much that I can do. I have to let go. My husband eats whatever he wants when I'm not around, right? And I can't get upset about that. I can't. I just have to know that He's got a God that loves him, and I can just be I can be the best wife I can possibly be, and then I got to surrender. I got to surrender because I just can't do it any other way. I am truly, truly, truly honored and just so grateful to be chosen to speak at this World Convention. I know that it went through a process. The speakers went through a process, and the World Convention or the World Committee has a responsibility to get speakers that are going to carry a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous, of what we're about in Narcotics Anonymous, and how our lives. This is a life-changing program. And if we come in and we're willing, so this topic is about willingness. I got real clear on that. This is about willingness, and without the spirit of willingness, nothing's going to happen. We can be as open-minded and honest, but if we're not willing to take some direction, we're not going to get it. Those three are indispensable, and then there's many more. But those are the three that we start with. So I love you guys. Thank you for letting me share.